What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Pickleball Connection podcast. I'm Barrett.
And I'm Danae.
And we're super excited to hang out with you today. We're kind of continuing in the theme of our episodes as we've gotten some good feedback on the Cruise the News segments. So these CTNs, basically we're kind of scanning the internet, looking for the latest kind of pickleball news, as well as some hot topics that come up at rec play, some controversial things. We're going to get into all of that and more. Let's just jump right into it, actually. Do you have anything to say before we jump into it?
Let's go in.
All right, let's go into it.
So this first topic is honestly pretty big. Okay. This person basically gives six things that they want to change about pickleball as a whole.
Okay. Okay.
So I'm going to kind of go through one at a time, and I think it'd be fun to kind of chat through it. And you guys feel free to comment along some of your thoughts, because these are pretty controversial in my opinion. So this is six ways to improve the sport of pickleball. Number one is adopt the bounce serve. And basically they go into the giant serving debate that that we've had about refs not being able to basically be able to call illegal serves, so-and-so, the serve's becoming too much of a weapon. And this person really believes that a simple solution to all the serving drama is just to universally adopt the bounce serve. So what's your opinion on that?
I think it's my hope that this doesn't happen. I do think it does solve some of the issues that we're having. I think we've discussed this on a previous podcast, but you know, the thing is, paddle technology comes up again. It continues to create more pace, more spin. They call them hot paddles because the game's just speeding up. And I think it's interesting that they're, you know, talking about de-weaponizing the serve, and this is one way to do it. This is one way to regulate it. But I think that we have an issue with paddles, you know, like if we slowed down the paddles, would we need to slow down the serve? We weren't talking about needing to de-weaponize the serve, you know, a couple years ago when paddles weren't as hot. I do think if they choose to de-weaponize the serve, I think honestly going to a drop serve is the best way to enforce it. I think the issue right now is that there's a lot of ambiguity and people don't really know what's legal and what's not. And they've changed it so many times, right?
And it's, in my opinion, it's hard to determine. If I was a ref, I would be stressed looking at everyone's serve.
Right.
It happens fast. It happens quick. I can see why it's hard to regulate.
Right. And they've gone through some different testing, whether it be, you know, you can only throw the ball up a ball's length, like, or they call it natural lift. Previously you could throw the ball up however high you wanted. At one point you couldn't throw the ball up at all. So I think the issue is, again, you know, there's this ambiguity, but at what it means to contact the ball below your waist, because by definition, your waist is technically anywhere from the top of your hips to your navel. So there's kind of this zone of like, where is actually below the waist and low to high motion.
And people aren't wearing crop tops. You know, it's like you can really tell where their belly button is.
I did see a match, I believe it was last weekend, and I think it was Pablo Tellez got called on his serve being illegal because they actually had nothing to do with the height of the ball, but they said that he was swinging with a flat motion. So
he wasn't low to high.
He wasn't swinging low to high. And they warned him on it, and then the second time he ended up losing a point.
Oh, wow.
So they're enforcing this as like you get one warning and then after that you lose a point. And he was like, I don't understand this. This doesn't seem right. But they're saying that he swung with or swung or swang.
Swung.
He swung.
Swing.
I'm like, from Texas. I am from Texas. Yeah, I think they said that he swung with a flat motion, right? So like kind of like this motion if you're watching, instead of low to high. So I think that it's interesting. Honestly, the drop serve would eliminate all this. So I agree in that sense. What do you think?
So it's hard, right? Because the title of this is Six Ways to Improve the Sport of Pickleball. So do you think, yes or no, that adopting the bounce serve improves the sport of pickleball? This is all just personal opinion.
No, I don't think it does. I think that just like in any sport, people have strengths, and you're removing this massive strength that's a skill that people have, that some people have better serves than others. And it, when you even the playing field too much, it just kind of, I don't think it's good for the sport, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think they're trying to find a way viewership wise, you know, to make it more, I can understand viewership wise, you're going to have longer points because the serve's not going to set up these quick points. And I do think that there is something beautiful about the nuance of like a long pickleball point, you know, when everyone's kind of holding their breath. So I think that in some ways it could make it more entertaining to watch or even to play if you don't have a good serve. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's the best thing for any sport to just even the playing field too much. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. What do you think? Do you think it makes it better? Yes or worse? Yes or no?
I'm on the fence on this one. I think if paddles continue to be as hot as they are, I think we might have to. I think if the paddle kind of cools down and you can't hit these absolute bullets, I think that, you know, then the regular volley serve is great. Again, I think pickleball wasn't designed to win on a serve.
Right.
So
yeah, I agree. All right, let's go to the next one. What's the next thing this guy said would make pickleball better?
The next way that pickleball will improve as a sport is going strictly to rally scoring. And this person says, this one will happen. It's just a question of when. And then they go on to just talk about volleyball, badminton, squash, and how that switched to rally score. So do you think rally scoring will improve the overall sport of pickleball?
No. I just don't like it as much. Maybe that's a personal preference.
Yeah.
I do think obviously the games get closer, but I think side out scoring is, I love it. You know, I think there's something so nuanced about in pickleball, you know, both players get a chance to serve and you don't score. You can only score on your serve. I think that it just creates different strategy. What do you think?
I agree with you. I do not think this will improve the sport. I understand everyone's argument is the viewership. You know, people want to see points happen every time. But to me, it really does make the games closer. We see that historically with MLP. You see it. I feel like I've seen it firsthand playing. The games just are way closer. And when you play how pickleball normally is played, those games aren't as close. And I just think it really does change the game.
I actually also I haven't met many people that are just definitive, like rally scoring is better. You know, I've met people that like it equally, but yeah. I think most people, when I talk to anyone, they prefer side out scoring.
When I was looking at this post in the comments, people were talking about how they didn't like rally scoring. Again, a lot of us understand why people think that it's going to go that direction because the viewership. But if you play pickleball, I've met very few, if any, people that say they like rally scoring more. I can't think of one.
Yeah, I would be curious. Maybe we're wrong, guys. Let us know in the comments. If you like rally scoring better, which means you don't have to score on your serve, you can score, you know, every single rally, every single point, every single rally results in a point. If that's how you prefer to play, kind of the team format, let us know in the comments. I'm curious.
Next one. This person says it. Replace the existing governing structure. This will improve the sport of pickleball. We're not going to go completely into it. If you guys want to listen to more of this talk, I think we talked about this on the last podcast. Mm-hmm. But basically right now there are two governing structures and it's causing a lot of like friction. So what are your thoughts?
I think that absolutely we need one governing structure. I think it causes a lot of confusion. We're not going to go into the details, like we said. I know where I stand on the whole thing. Mm-hmm. One is a nonprofit, one is a for-profit. One has more recently come into existence, and it just feels like money is involved with a lot of their decisions. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not inside their head. I don't know exactly what's going on in their decision-making process, so I'm not trying to, you know, assume wrongly or anything or put any wrong assumptions on them. But I do believe that this will happen, and it needs to happen, especially for players that are coming into the sport, for amateurs, for paddle regulations, all of it. What do you think?
I agree. I think that regardless, I don't really, whether it's USAPA or a new governing structure, whatever, I do think having two is wild. It's just causing a lot of separation. But also, I'm a firm believer that that governing body needs to be a nonprofit. There's no other sport that is governed by a for-profit organization. It just doesn't make sense. So that's just personally where I stand on the whole ordeal. I think that that would be in the best interest of the sport of pickleball. Again, that's just my opinion.
I can't even, whether it's nonprofit or for-profit, I can't think of another sport that has two governing bodies, you know, in general, right?
I mean, I'm not that learned or whatever it is.
Informed.
Informed on all the other sports governing bodies. But I do think just having two is just so confusing when it comes to regulations and like, what do you do at rec play? You know, it's like,
which
just,
regulations do you follow?
Yeah, exactly. Like what paddle is legal? Well, this one's not legal and this one is legal. And this, like, it's just so confusing. And it's a bummer because I do think that it's causing a lot of separation in the sport. So I'm pretty sure we're both agreeing on that front. It should really just be one governing body.
Yeah. Okay. What's the next one?
Next one, having the APP and the PPA either merge or agree to a cooperative structure. This will improve the sport of pickleball. What is your thought on this? And if you guys don't know, really quick, I should probably give a little background here. The PPA and the APP are both different professional and amateur organizations. So like the APP has their own professionals and professional events, and the PPA has their own professionals and professional events. And they both run amateur tournaments as well. But what's been happening, of course, in the past couple of years is they'll have, you know, their tournaments on the same weekends sometimes. So a lot of the times pros can't play in all of those events because they're competing weekends or competing days. And then the PPA had exclusivity in their contracts. So then certain, you know, if you were sponsored by the PPA, you couldn't play in APP. So, you know, again, you just had a lot of division. So this person says having them merge or agree to a cooperative structure is going to improve the sport of pickleball. What do you think?
I don't know on this one, actually. I think it's interesting. It's clear that the PPA does have the top talent and the top pros, and it kind of feels like the APP is a great spot for, like, you know, emerging pros mm-hmm. to kind of make their splash. But there are some people that have seemed to be pretty loyal to APP, and mm-hmm. I think we've seen a couple people jump from one to the other, but for the most part, you've kind of seen the APPers stick there and the PPAers stick there. I mean, you've seen like an Andre Dayescu at one point, the Johnson siblings were playing both, and now they're strictly with PPA. But, you know, I think in this little article, this guy kind of relates it to like the PPA Tour being like a top pro baseball league and the APP being like AAA. And I think in that sense, what he's getting at is will these two organizations ever learn to work together, right? Like the AAA systems in baseball feed into the Major League Baseball. It's all under the umbrella of Major League Baseball. They work together. I don't really see that happening.
I don't either.
I don't see the APP and PPA coming to any sort of like working together. So I'll be interested to see. I thought the future of the APP kind of like was going to be in going international. But the PPA has recently announced in 2025, they're going to have quite a few international stops. The APP's already kind of dipped into some international stops. This is my prediction. I could be wrong. I think we're going to see APP kind of merge into the collegiate pickleball world. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be kind of AP, the collegiate Duper. I think Duper is currently kind of over like the collegiate pickleball. I think APP could step into that arena and we could see that PPA just be the big one. I could be wrong though, but what do you think?
I mean, I think if they were to be more cooperative, it would again be better for the sport. I think it would be better for the professionals. But again, to be honest, right now the PPA is governed by a for-profit organization. So I'm like, well, now I don't want the for-profit organization to own another organization, you know? So I'm like, yeah, I want them to cooperate, but I do like the APP and I think they run really incredible events. You can talk to a lot of amateur players and, you know, a lot of people have historically a great experience with APP events.
Yeah. Yeah. I've only done one. I didn't have the greatest experience, but I think you've done more than me.
Yeah.
And I've heard other people that have had good experiences with APP. So I think in general, I think the focus is on the pros and the amateurs kind of are just get to be there. And I don't know that there's an organization out there that just absolutely kills it and only focusing on amateurs.
Yeah.
That might be where we see USA Pickleball kind of morph into that. We'll see. But I agree that I mean, I think it would be nice if there was some sort of cooperation. I don't see it happening. Hey guys, real quick, we do want to briefly mention Selkirk backpacks. We really love the backpacks that Selkirk has put out. They're really functional, really versatile. They look really sharp. We use them when we play and we use them when we travel.
Actually, last time we were in the airport, we packed our Selkirk backpacks for basically our luggage. And the person behind us was like, whoa, like those are such cool backpacks. Like it's awesome.
They're like, where'd you get them?
Yeah, it's just, they're super functional. They have a bunch of different sizes. I take stuff for work and mine and bring it to a coffee shop. I mean, they're awesome.
Yeah, guys. So if you're in the market for a backpack, there's all different sizes, all different colors. Head on over to selkirk.com and get yours today.
Yeah. Okay. We have two more. Second to last one is trimming back MLP. This person says MLP has been a fun addition, but it's been a lot. So, you know, just saying that there's a lot of events, a lot of things are back to back. This person's just saying to cut back the events and basically cut back from MLP events. So I'm really interested in what you think about this. Will that help support, make the game better?
I don't think so. I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with this one too. I mean, I could see both sides. I could see cutting back the MLP. There's more of a clear focus. Again, I think there's a lot of kind of confusion. Like if somebody's just getting into pickleball right now, it's like, what? There's two organizations. There's a team format. There's pro tour. There's a tour style format. You know, there's APP, there's MLP, there's UPA, USA. I mean, there's so many acronyms, you know, I think that there is a little bit of confusion that could be, but I think I brought this up on previous podcasts. I think where MLP actually positively affects the growth of pickleball is that you see partnerships that you will never see on the PPA tour. And it allows kind of for emerging pros to really make a name for themselves. Like I think we brought up on another episode, like Amari Humberg, Vivian Glossman, these players that will never get to partner with the top, probably would have never gotten to partner with the top players on the PPA tour. But then you see, you know, like Rachel Rohrabacher kind of made her name in the MLP. Now she's partnering with Anna Bright. Mari Humberg really kind of had a big boost in her stock, if you will. And she got to play alongside Anna Lee, which is really good for her. So I think that there's some benefits to having both. I don't know that I see just a crazy ton of benefits to doing away with MLP at this point. What about you?
I don't want to see MLP go away. To be honest, I kind of agree with this person. I do think that, especially with this year, the MLP events feel just a little different because not all the teams are there. The venues are interesting. Like if you guys went to MLP last year or the year before, it was so like, it's so hype because all the teams are there. Everybody's there. And like that whole weekend, like there's a winner of that weekend and it feels mm-hmm. like this completed event. What's hard about this year is, you know, you have like this point system, not everybody's there. The point system like doesn't really make sense when you look at it straight up because not all the teams have played the same amount of matches. I think it's kind of lost a little bit of like that, like glittery mm-hmm. excitement because of those things. I think if we scaled back to like 4 MLP events a year, you know, where it's like once a quarter, you know, you have an MLP event with everybody there, I think that would be cool. Again, that's my personal opinion. I just feel like this year it's like not as appealing to me to want to go to an MLP event just yeah. because you're not going to see everybody.
Yeah. The thing is interesting. I think that, you know, the PPA Tour has these like end of the year finals, right? Where you have like the standings for the PPA throughout the year. I think like the top 8 players make the finals or something for singles and doubles. And then based off of you making the finals, you get like first, second, third choice on who your partner is of those 8. Be interesting to see if they did something like that where they kind of use the PPA Tour, gathered points through the PPA Tour, and then that kind of like placed players on different MLP teams, maybe like the top 12 players in the PPA standings become the captains for the teams or something, and then they do more of like an end of the year kind of event or like a biannual event. I mean, I could see something like that where there's more of emerging and evolving. I do think that cutting back a little bit, I do miss, just like you, I miss the having a winner after every event.
It was just exciting. Like it was just cool.
And I think that they need to continue that. I think they maybe if they cut back to six tournaments a year or something, there's a winner after every event. And they also have an end of the year thing. And, you know, further you go in each tournament, the more points you get towards your end of the year, big shebang points and seeding for the final tournament. So I think that there's different ways to do it. I think it's going to continue to evolve. And maybe some of the evolution of it is trimming back the number of events.
Yeah. All right. This is the very last one. And this one's pretty simple, but it says slow down the paddles. This is going to improve the sport of pickleball. So I know we touched on this a little bit, but what is your take on that?
I definitely don't think they need to get any faster.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
Slowing them down, I do think that we could see that at some point. I don't know when that's going to be, but I do think that that's my input. I don't think they need to get any faster than they are now.
This person says, if we don't do this, pickleball may one day look as boring as tennis does now. Everyone just stand at the baseline, hit as hard as you can, shot after shot. I kind of laughed at that, but it really is. It's interesting being somebody that has been in the sport for quite a long time, 4 years. You know, the sport looks wildly different because the equipment has evolved. And again, not evolved doesn't necessarily mean good. And I do think that we are losing some of the like magic of pickleball, of what it once was, of these long rallies and thinking, and there's just shots you can do now that you can never have done 2 years ago. So, yes, I think the paddles are maybe a little bit too fast for my personal liking. However, I could see if you just started playing pickleball in the past year, you don't really know what it was like.
Yeah.
So again, this is coming from somebody that
has seen the evolution.
Yeah. Has seen the evolution.
All right, guys. Well, let us know your kind of opinions about any of these 6 things that we discussed from this article. We'll link these kind of articles in the description so you can go check them out. From this last one, let us know your thoughts. But let's go ahead and move on to the next one, should we?
Yeah, let's go.
So this next one won't be quite as long as the first one, but basically there was a post that I came across on the Pickleball Forum Facebook page. Pickleball Forum Facebook page. And this person said, what is the best way to deal with bangers? Now, when they say bangers, they're talking about someone that just hits hard, that bangs the ball, that drives everything, doesn't really ever play the soft game. You come across one of these players, I'm sure most of you that are listening that play pickleball have come across one of these players. There's probably someone in your head right now. What do you do in order to beat somebody that's just a hard hitter? So I'll start with you and then I'll throw in some stuff. What would you do?
So biggest thing that I feel like helps with bangers are I guess I'll say like two or three things. So one is learn how to have a good counter. So basically punish them if they hit a higher ball that's going to be above the net that you can hit down on, right? Because that's going to make their next ball a lot harder. I've noticed when I developed a really good counter for people's drives when I'm at the kitchen line, that really honestly punishes them and makes them have to double think about like hitting their drive. Another thing that is huge is letting out balls go, okay? So if you have somebody that loves to hit hard, a lot of times some of those balls are going to go out. So really having the ability to have the control, self-control to let those balls go out, that's going to discourage them from hitting, you know, hard every time. Last one is make them play slow. So especially when you get them in transition or in the kitchen line area, get that person dinking, get them playing slow. You dictate the pace. I've noticed that people like to play fast, don't like to play slow. So when you dictate the point in that area, and for example, you keep your dinks really shallow, they're not going to be able to hit fast because that dink is either going to go out or in the net.
Yeah.
So shallow dinks, slow dinks, that's going to be very frustrating for your hard hitters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would echo everything that you said. I think another thing would be just learn to aim at the feet. Mm-hmm. Learn to aim at their feet. The closer the ball lands to their feet, the more defensive they really have to be with it. All bangers want the ball to bounce high. So if you're someone that kind of hits more of a defensive drop or a defensive dink, try, or even if maybe your drives are flat or a little bit high, try to get the ball dipping over the net. Try to be a little more aggressive with your drops, a little more, you know, let that ball bounce as close to their feet as possible. It's really hard to be a banger if you're taking the ball off the short hop.
Yeah.
And I think, again, if, like Danae said, if you can learn to counter and if they give you pace, you give them pace back, that's going to fare really well for you. If you're not at that point yet, get the ball at their feet. The further, the higher it is, the more that they're going to have success, whether that's off the bounce or in the air. And then, yeah, I would say that would be everything that you said, plus just aiming at the feet. I think that's a big one to beat a banger.
And this is such a common question I feel like people say, especially beginners that are learning the game. So if you guys have like a strategy that you do when you encounter bangers, because we all do, if you've played pickleball, I know that you've played somebody like this, comment down below what you do to kind of help deal with bangers on the
court. I guess I did have one more thought. I think there are the rare breed out there that prefer the backhand over the forehand, but I think the majority of bangers probably prefer their forehand.
That's such an easy tip. Yes, that's great.
So I would say just start finding backhands, whether that's mm-hmm. your serve, whether that's your return, that's where you're placing your dinks. Just start finding people's backhands, aim at the feet. Those are my two things to add to everything that Danae said.
Yeah, that's great. And then this last kind of thing, we're talking about another shot in pickleball. So this person talks about what is the worst shot in pickleball? And basically they're asking like, what shot has the lowest chance of success or the least chance to help somebody win? This person goes on to say, the answer is the drop volley. For those who are unsure in pickleball terms what this is, a drop volley is a ball that's played out of the air where you try to drop it like just over the net, hoping that it bounces, you know, twice before the opponent can reach to get it. So I'm curious at what you think of this person's analysis of the worst shot in pickleball.
You know, I heard Dave Fleming, an announcer on PPA Tour, mentioned this. I think that this comes from an article on pickleball.com, if you want to check it out, where basically the writer of this article is agreeing with Dave Fleming. I think that, yes, the ROI on the drop volley, which is typically going to happen when you and your partner are at the kitchen, the other team is back on the baseline, and you think, ooh, I'm just going to drop this ball right in the kitchen. They're not going to see it coming, and they're going to have to sprint forward, and it's not going to work. I think there's been plenty of times where I've tried that, and I've been like, oh no, they tracked it down. Now they're at the kitchen. Now the point is neutral. I shouldn't have done that. I have also seen it work. I have also seen effective. I think if you're going to drop volley, you better be really good at it. It better be really deceptive and it better be very shallow. I've even tried to drop volley before, like kind of take it at an angle and I push it out. I push it wide. So it better be shallow and it better be very deceptive. Otherwise, because I do think it can work, especially maybe the player that you're playing against isn't as fast or mobile, but you're not typically thinking when you're playing somebody about like how fast they are, like in the middle of a point, oh, I shouldn't drop volley this because they're going to get up there. I think especially like on when people play like us, I think we rely mainly more on kind of like a finesse game and speed. I think we're like drop volley this all day because like it's much easier to track down the pickleball. Like a lot of times you think the point's over, but somebody will get there, you know? So what do you think? Do you think it's the worst shot in pickleball?
That's so hard. I don't think it's the best shot in pickleball. I think that, you know, like you, I've seen it work, but I do think your the margin that you have for hitting a really good drop volley that nobody's going to get is rare. I do think a lot of times we overcomplicate the game and we try to do something a little too flashy. Whereas, you know, when you have an overhead, like keep people back for the most part. That's what I do. Like just the margin for that shot is you have to be so on it. I do think like if you're playing odds in your head, the odds are probably better if you keep them back for the most part, unless you are an incredible drop volleyer, you know, I don't think the average person has a great drop volley. If I'm being honest.
And I will say too, I guess one thing you might have to keep in mind is the type of player that you're playing against. Like let's say, or even like if it's singles, maybe like if you're playing against somebody that just has an incredible drive, incredible type of like dipping passing shot, and you are you're significantly better than them at the kitchen, you like your odds with them up close to you more than you do with them behind you or like back on the baseline, then maybe. But again, that's knowing your opponent.
And I think singles is different because you have to cover the whole court. Remember, in doubles, you're kind of covering half the court only. So I feel like in doubles, it's way riskier than singles.
Well, yeah, if somebody's like back right hand corner of the court and you're dropping it like to the like front left, there's a lot more ground to cover. So I do think that singles, maybe it makes a little more sense depending on your type of play. If you like to get into the cat and mouse stuff and you like to dink and move the ball around in singles to get to the kitchen line versus just trying to play at the baseline and pass people, maybe that's a thing. But yeah, I would agree more. I would say more often than not, I see it come back to bite people than to help people when they try to drop it in the kitchen.
Do you think it's the worst shot in all of pickleball?
No.
I don't think so either.
What do you think the worst shot is?
I think the worst shot in pickleball is hitting a ball in the net.
That's what I was going to say.
It's the worst shot in the game.
Yeah, whether it's a third, whether it's a drive.
A dink, whatever.
It doesn't matter. You should...
Rather have you hit it out.
You're better off hitting it out because maybe they'll hit it, right?
Exactly.
But I do agree. We try to be way too perfect with our shots and just barely get it to cross over the net. And one of the best shots in pickleball is when it clips the tape and it like messes them up. One of the worst shots is when it hits the tape or below. So
one of my favorite, shout out to Tyson McGuffin. One of my favorite things he always said is don't flirt with the net. I think it's one of the best things to have in your head.
Yeah. It's better to
get the ball over.
Get another ball in return that you can reset a little better than hitting it into the net. So I would agree with you. That's the worst shot in pickleball. Drop volley, second. All right, guys. Well, we appreciate, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. Remember, however you're consuming this podcast, we'd really appreciate a review. So please leave us a 5-star review and spread the word. It really helps us continue to grow this. We eventually are going to start bringing out guests and make this podcast better for you, the listener. But thanks so much for hanging out with us, and we'll see you on the next one.
See you in the next one.